Welcome to our press teleconference. I'm Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that is dedicated to the enforcement of environmental laws to protect public health. Today, we are releasing a new report, Groundwater Contamination from Texas Coal Ash Dumps. You can find the report on our website at www.environmentalintegrity.org. Today, we will have four speakers, and then we'll take questions from reporters. Our first speaker will be Abel Russ, attorney for the Environmental Integrity Project and co-author of the report. Next, we'll have Lisa Evans, senior counsel for Earth Justice. Next, we'll have Jason Peeler, a fifth-generation rancher south of San Antonio, whose groundwater has been contaminated with pollutants from a coal ash dump, the worst contamination we found in Texas in our research. And fourth, we'll have Chrissy Mann, senior campaign representative for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. So we'll start off first with Abel Russ. His name is spelled A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, attorney for the Environmental Integrity Project and co-author of the report. Go ahead, Abel.
Thanks, Tom. This is Abel Russ. I was one of the authors of the report, and I'm also, as an attorney, involved in litigation over the federal EPA coal ash rule and other site-specific coal ash-related cases. I'm going to very quickly explain what we found, and then I'm going to go back and explain how this report came about and how we analyzed the data. So at all of the coal plants in Texas with groundwater data, the groundwater is contaminated and unsafe. There are three coal plants in the state with no data, about which we can't draw any conclusions, but of the 16 coal plants with data, all 16 are contaminated. The source of contamination is coal ash, which is the ash left over from burning coal. And coal ash concentrates all of the toxic metals that are found in coal, including arsenic and other carcinogens, multiple neurotoxins, and several pollutants that are toxic to aquatic life. When coal ash is exposed to water, all of these toxic pollutants are rinsed out of the coal ash and they migrate into local groundwater and frequently from there into surface water. This happens all the time in Texas because virtually all coal ash ponds and landfills are unlined or poorly lined. The predictable result is widespread environmental contamination. 13 of the 16 coal plants in Texas that we looked at have unsafe levels of arsenic, with concentrations at times exceeding safe levels by 10 times and more. 14 plants have unsafe levels of cobalt, with concentrations up to 100 times the safe level. And most coal plants also have unsafe levels of boron, lithium, and or sulfate. And looking at individual sites, the groundwater at the San Miguel site south of San Antonio, about which you will hear more later in this call, has unsafe levels of 12 different coal ash constituents. The same is true of the Martin Lake plant near Tatum. Now, Martin Lake also happens to be a popular recreational fishing lake, and there's a state park just across the water from the coal plant. Similarly, Calaveras Lake near San Antonio is a popular fishing lake, and the groundwater at both of those two coal plants has elevated levels of selenium, which bioaccumulates and is toxic to fish. Both sites also have elevated levels of boron and cadmium, which are also toxic to aquatic life, and to different degrees at each site, elevated levels of arsenic, lead, and or mercury, which can make fish unsafe to eat. And I should also note, with regard to fish, that the U.S. EPA has listed three Texas coal plants as what they call proven damage cases precisely because of unsafe selenium levels in fish. And these are the Martin Lake, Perky, and Welsh plants, which are all in northeast Texas. And you can see a map of the state in our report that shows where they are. Our report describes each coal plant in some detail, but the basic story is the same across the state. So that's a high-level summary. And now for a little bit of background, the Environmental Integrity Project has been collecting and analyzing groundwater data from coal plants for almost 10 years. For most of that time, the only data we had were generated pursuant to state law, and the data were patchy and inconsistent, but we obtained what we could through information requests, and we posted the data on an interactive map-based website called ashtracker.org, which is still up and running. Then the monitoring requirements of the coal ash rule kicked in, and coal plants were required to make the data publicly available for the first time in March of 2018. And this was significant for at least two reasons. First, it's the first time that we've had a comprehensive, internally consistent inventory of groundwater quality data from across the country. And second, the coal ash rule required monitoring for several toxic pollutants that were often ignored under state law, including cobalt, lithium, and molybdenum, and others. The new data were hard to process in some cases. You might see 900 or 1,200 pages of lab reports instead of a simple table tabulating the results. And so our immediate task was extracting all of the data, analyzing the data, interpreting the data for the public, which is something that the EPA is notably not doing. And I want to mention that we focused on drinking water standards in the report because that's how the coal ash rule operates. But there are, of course, other risks to aquatic life, to people who consume fish, and to neighboring property that can occur even where the drinking water standards are not exceeded. Typically what you see, though, is that it's unsafe for drinking and toxic to aquatic life and toxic to people who consume fish and affecting neighboring property all at the same time. So there are over 250 coal plants worth of data from the U.S., and since last March, EIP has been working with a coalition of partners, including Earth Justice, Sierra Club, and others, to extract and synthesize all of this data. And we compiled the current report for Texas when we got to the point where we had a complete data set for Texas. Our report also includes some of the older data from our AshTracker website and other sources. And if you go to ashtracker.org, you'll find, I think, that most of the Texas sites are populated with all of the data at our disposal from both before and after the coal ash rule. And before I stop, I just want to make two quick points about conclusions and recommendations, I guess. There are a couple of major gaps in the federal regulatory scheme. First of all, it has to do with closure. According to a D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals opinion from last year, all unlined coal ash ponds have to close, and virtually all coal ash ponds in the U.S. are defined as unlined under the coal ash rule. So all the coal ash ponds in Texas and across the U.S. are going to have to close, and it's very important that they're closed in a way that's environmentally sensitive. And the most important thing to consider, from my perspective after looking at a lot of these sites, is that the ash dumps should not be closed in place if the coal ash is in contact with groundwater, because you can't eliminate that risk if you leave the ash sitting in groundwater. And at least two coal plants, the Monticello and the Welsh plants, acknowledge that their ash dumps are in contact with groundwater, but they're planning to close them in place anyway. This isn't going to do anything to restore groundwater quality, and you're going to see contamination for decades. And lastly, I want to point out that the federal rule only applies to active ponds and landfills and to some recently deactivated ponds. But at many coal plants, there are other unregulated coal ash dumps, old ponds and landfills that were closed in place years ago. We've identified those in the report where we can. A lot of times nobody knows where they are or what they are except the owner of the plant. And so it's just something to keep in mind, because if you do everything you can for the active units, you won't be able to restore the groundwater quality unless you've actually addressed all of the coal ash at a site, not just the ones that happen to be regulated by the rule. And I'm going to stop there for now and happy to take more questions later.
Thanks. That was Abel Russ, A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, attorney for the Environmental Integrity Project and a co-author of the report. Also, I want to make one note. Abel mentioned the Monticello and Welch plants. Those are in northeast Texas, and you can see those on the map in our report. Next, we're going to have Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel for Earth Justice, L-I-S-A-E-V-A-N-S. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to everyone listening online. My role at the nonprofit law firm of Earth Justice is primarily to address coal ash from a national perspective. For over a decade, Earth Justice has advocated for federal protections from toxic ash pollution, and we seek to hold federal decision makers accountable for protecting health and the environment. But it's important today to see where Texas fits into this national picture and to examine whether the state of Texas is meeting its responsibility to protect its residents and water resources from coal ash pollution. Texas often has the dubious distinction of generating more ash than any other state in the U.S. Recently, it produced more than 13 million tons of toxic ash in a single year. That's equivalent to burying the Dallas Cowboy football field 1 mile high in ash every year. Although Texas may be the best at generating this toxic waste, its laws governing disposal are among the worst. Texas has a long history of turning a blind eye to water contamination. State law currently exempts from regulation all coal ash disposed on site at the power plant. But on site, as defined in Texas, is anywhere within 50 miles of the plant. Texas also includes from protection all ash that is destined for beneficial reuse. This is a huge problem because in Texas, beneficial reuse includes filling coal mines with industrial waste. You will hear shortly about the damage caused to a rancher by this type of unregulated dumping. The lack of protective regulations in Texas and the high volume of toxic waste has led historically to groundwater and surface water contamination throughout the state. This includes discharges from coal ash ponds that contaminated three Texas reservoirs, as you just heard Abel describe. Coal ash poisoned the water in the reservoirs, caused major fish kills, and contaminated fish with high levels of selenium that lasted for over a decade and prompted fish consumption advisories, particularly for children and pregnant women. The bad news is that little has changed in Texas. As Abel just described, we found that 16 of 16 Texas plants are poisoning groundwater with toxic waste at levels that are unsafe for human consumption. My main point today is that we are facing these problems nationwide, and neither the federal government nor state regulators in Texas or elsewhere are adequately protecting communities. Because the federal EPA now requires that all utilities publish monitoring data, we know exactly what hazardous chemicals have leaked to groundwater. Thus, the impact of toxic ash is finally revealed. Today, we have a crystal clear picture not only for Texas, but for the entire nation of the serious harm caused by coal ash. Throughout the U.S., there are more than 1,000 coal ash ponds and landfills. Let's examine the national impacts and then look at how the Trump EPA and the state of Texas have failed to respond to the threat. First, the utility industry has admitted serious groundwater contamination at nearly all their coal ash disposal sites. More than 95% of the nation's toxic coal ash ponds and landfills are leaking hazardous chemicals at unsafe levels to groundwater. In an upcoming report next month, Earth Justice and EIP will show exactly where this is occurring. Just like in Texas, the groundwater at most sites is poisoned with unsafe levels of arsenic, cobalt, borum, lithium, molybdenum, radium, and more. And just like in Texas, communities have no idea whether this contamination has poisoned drinking water because states have not required that nearby drinking water wells be tested. Secondly, most coal ash ponds are unlined and violate federal standards by sitting in our aquifers. Nationally, less than 5% of all the coal ash ponds in the U.S. have a protective composite liner to prevent toxic chemicals from leaking to groundwater. Said another way, more than 95% of toxic ash ponds are unlined. As Abel indicated, in Texas, all coal ash ponds are unlined, according to the federal coal ash rule. In addition, EPA's federal rule requires a 5-foot separation from the bottom of the ash pond to the underlying aquifer. Several ponds in Texas are violating this standard, thus ensuring that toxic chemicals from ash will poison groundwater until the source is finally removed. Worse yet, the majority of toxic ash ponds in the U.S. are similarly sitting in or very near our aquifers. These aquifers are often the source of water for nearby communities, and coal ash pollution can render the water hazardous for humans and livestock and unsuitable for irrigation. Poisoned groundwater may also flow to streams and reservoirs, killing fish and making the water too contaminated for swimming or fishing. Third, many utilities plan to walk away from their leaking dumps. Many plant owners vow to never remove ash from the groundwater, even after they stop using their ash ponds. In Texas and across the nation, utilities intend to keep hazardous ash in ponds permanently, even when these ponds are sitting and leaking into aquifers. This will leave a never-ending source of contamination that threatens our health and environment and violates federal law. It is the responsibility of the power plant owner to ensure that their waste disposal is safe and at closure to ensure a permanent, clean future for their neighbors. So what is the Trump administration doing about this mess? Unfortunately, EPA's Administrator Wheeler's plan is in lockstep with industry's agenda. His clear plan is to weaken federal protections, and he has already started this rollback. Andrew Wheeler, a former coal lobbyist, is doing the dirty bidding of industry and is making a very bad situation much worse. Last spring, Wheeler ignored the widespread threats to public health from contaminated groundwater and instead proposed a sweeping rollback of the 2015 coal ash rule. This proposal would gut water protections, weaken cleanup standards, and remove protective siting requirements. This was exactly what industry asked for. In July, in fact, EPA issued its first rollback rule, weakening the 2015 federal rule. The Trump EPA delayed closure nationwide of leaking unlined ponds and ponds currently sitting in groundwater. The new Trump rule removed the deadlines of the 2015 rule and encourages utilities to continue dumping into leaking pits. Further, according to EPA, the agency has at least two more significant rollbacks planned. The first of these will be proposed this winter. But the Trump administration, in these rollbacks, is clearly running afoul of the law. In August, the D.C. Court of Appeals, in a case brought by Earth Justice, ruled that EPA must strengthen, not weaken, the 2015 rule to provide greater health and environmental protection. Whether the Trump EPA complies with the law remains to be seen, but if they don't, we will see them in court again. States, however, also have authority to issue rules to prevent coal ash pollution, and they too can do much better. In the face of pollution that hurts their citizens, states can strengthen rules to protect health and water resources. Texas, however, has not proposed to do this. Instead, last August, Texas proposed regulations that fail to strengthen the current EPA rule and would weaken it illegally in critical ways. Among its dangerous provisions, Texas regulations would, first, allow greater pollution in coal ash contaminated water than the EPA does. In the case of cobalt, for example, which harms the heart, blood, thyroid, and other parts of the body, Texas would allow water to be contaminated up to 40 times the federal health standard. And you've heard from Abel that there's dangerous coal ash contamination at 14 of the 16 plants. Secondly, it would fail to require timely notice to affected landowners who own property impacted by contaminated water. Third, it would fail to allow any meaningful public participation in the permitting of coal ash disposal sites. And four, it would allow owners to sample groundwater only once a year, which will not provide sufficient data or adequate notice of pollution. Fortunately, Texas has since withdrawn this proposal, but it is far from clear what direction a new state proposal will take. In summary, Texas is both emblematic and a large part of the nationwide problem. We know that in Texas and throughout the country that toxic coal ash dumps are leaking unsafe levels of hazardous chemicals, that impacts on drinking water and local waterways are unknown and ignored, that closure and capping of leaking dumps cannot address the core problem that the toxic ash is in contact with groundwater, and that finally that we can't rely on EPA, that Andrew Wheeler's EPA insists on giving utility companies more time to pollute and fewer rules to follow to protect our health and environment. Lastly, however, information is power. This is why Earth Justice and EPA make critical data available to impacted communities. As long as communities understand the harm occurring at these toxic sites, there is hope that industry, states, or the EPA will not get away with continuing to endanger our health and pollute our water. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel for Earth Justice, LISAEVANS. Lisa Evans. One note, that some of the data that Lisa was talking about is available at our ash tracker website, www.ashtracker.org. Next, we're going to have Jason Peeler, a fifth-generation rancher south of San Antonio whose groundwater has been contaminated with pollutants from a coal ash dump, the worst contamination we found in Texas in our research. His name is spelled J-A-S-O-N-P-E-E-L-E-R, Jason Peeler. Go ahead, Jason.
Dom, just a little point of clarification. Actually, my kids would be the fifth generation. So my name's Jason Peeler, and my family has owned our ranch, the A.M. Peeler Ranch, which is about an hour south of San Antonio, for over 100 years. So for five generations, we've raised cattle, we've improved our rangeland, we've increased the abundance of wildlife and wildlife habitat, and it's been our business and a big part of our recreation for my whole life. And just for reference, I'm 51. So in 1975, my parents sold about 350 acres in the central part of our ranch to the San Miguel Electric Co-op to build a power plant. That plant started operation in the early 1980s. My parents believed the plant would be good for the community, provide taxes for our schools and jobs for our people, and needed electricity for rural areas. In addition, about 4,000 acres of the Pila Ranch had been mined for lignite. That was from 1980 to 2004, and that lignite was burned at the plant. Sam McGill promised to clean up and remediate the property when they were done, and my family trusted them to keep their word. At the Sam McGill plant, there are three coal ash ponds and a landfill where fly ash, bottom ash, and scrubber blowdown are stored before disposal in the old mine pits on our ranch, in the old mine area on our ranch. These unlined ash ponds are 40 years old and a little more than giant holes in the ground. Over time, the ponds have leaked, and we are seeing impacts outside the plant fence line on our property. We know from the company's own data that the groundwater under our ranch is contaminated with toxic heavy metals like arsenic and selenium. The report from EIP found Sam McGill is the most contaminated coal ash site in the state of Texas. We believe the contamination from the ash ponds is killing our soil and our groundwater, and then we've definitely seen vegetation death and fish kills in our ponds. There are areas to the northeast and east of the plant where the soil on our property looks white and seems to be falling apart. Water seeps up from the ground in certain spots, and the grass is dead and gone. This is not what a typical South Texas pasture should look like. And those dead areas are growing in size also. Since the leaks and the seeps appear to run into the La Perita Creek system, we're worried the contamination may run into the Atascosa and Nueces rivers, which are the primary water sources for the cities of Three Rivers and Corpus Christi. On a routine basis, trucks haul the coal ash from the plant to the old mine, where the coal ash is dumped into the old fractured mine pits with piles of ash over 100 feet high from ground elevation. The pits are open to the elements, too, so the wind can blow the coal ash onto adjacent land, and then rain can infiltrate the coal ash. As we understand it, San Miguel hauls nearly 2 million tons of coal ash from the plant for disposal in the old mine every year. San Miguel also discharges water impounded in the old mine pits over the top of our ranch, sometimes flooding hundreds of acres with wastewater. That wastewater is contaminating our property as well, again, with the soil falling apart and water seeping up from the ground in large areas where the grass has died. The wastewater discharge from the mine is also headed to the La Perita Creek system. Unfortunately, we are just learning about the impacts the coal ash has had on our ranch. It has happened little by little over time. We didn't see what was happening underground. And you can't look at water and know if it has arsenic or selenium in it. Now that we are fighting to get Sam McGill to clean up the mess they have made, Sam McGill has responded by trying to use the power of eminent domain to condemn our land. Instead of cleaning up like they promised, Sam McGill is trying to take from us what my family has built over five generations. The prospect of losing our ranch is like losing a family member. I know that there are bigger conversations that need to be had about how we generate electricity and safely handle the byproducts, but for our family, this is about right and wrong. We want our ranch restored to the way it was before, just like Sam McGill has repeatedly promised my parents. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks very much. That was Jason Peeler, J-A-S-O-N-P-E-E-L-E-R, a rancher south of San Antonio. Finally, we're going to have Chrissy Mann, C-H-R-I-S-S-Y-M-A-N-N, Senior Campaign Representative for the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Chrissy, go ahead.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks, everyone, for joining. You know, as we've just heard, it's really imperative that dangerous coal ash waste is handled and disposed of correctly so that pollution like heavy metals doesn't leach into nearby waterways and groundwaters. And for lots of folks, it's really personal. And of course, even if corporate polluters finally address the pollution from the existing waste from decades of burning coal, we also recognize that we have to stop creating more of this waste and stop burning coal altogether. So in addition to preventing more water pollution from coal ash, quickly phasing out coal altogether is really foundational to slowing our climate crisis and improving our air quality across the state. And our solutions really are at hand for a rapid transition from dangerous coal to clean energy. And clean energy technologies are mature and cost-effective. You've probably seen the windmills dot the landscape. And if you're in certain parts of South Texas, you've seen large solar arrays. The Texas electric market indicates that no one is developing new coal resources. Coal is not making a comeback. Specifically, ERCOT, the entity that manages the vast majority of the electric grid in Texas, issued a December 2018 report showing that exactly zero coal power projects are at any point of evaluation for future connection to the ERCOT grid. So that's really good news. In contrast, we see that of the 90,000 megawatts of potential power generation being evaluated, only 10% of that's even gas, and the rest is wind, solar, and storage. But we still have over a dozen plants in Texas providing significant power to Texas homes, businesses, and industry. Well, luckily, Texas leads the nation in installed wind energy capacity, and that capacity is now greater than the coal capacity installed in Texas. And the wind installations keep growing in size, and they grow in efficiency, and that means lower prices for folks that have to pay electric bills. And Texas isn't number one in solar yet, like we are in wind, but solar capacity in Texas is expected to grow exponentially. And as it does, solar prices continue to fall. This is a fact many large purchasers of power are noting, especially cities. So we're seeing across the state recent-based market decisions for large coal-heavy utilities, I should have said across the country, showing that it's cheaper in many cases to build new wind, solar, and storage than it is to continue to rely on existing coal, like the coal that is impacting the land at the Peeler Ranch or the coal that is impacting the waters across the state. So a recent example from another state that's very coal-heavy, Indiana. NIPSCO, which is a large Indiana utility that's currently 65% coal-dependent, which is much more coal-dependent than our state is at large, announced that it has plans to retire all of its coal plants within the next decade and replace all of that generation with clean energy, energy efficiency, and storage by 2028. And that's all great, but what's really interesting is that that move will save their customers $4.3 billion over running those same coal plants through 2035. And I give this Indiana analysis because it's not an outlier. It just makes good economic sense for the customers of Texas power plants and utilities, including the member co-ops of the San Miguel Electric Co-op, who are buying inefficient, dirty power to demand the same. A robust economic analysis to dig into the costs and risks of continuing to rely on this existing coal operation versus transitioning quickly to clean energy. So while some, like San Miguel, might ignore the economic reality, other large power generators are slowly coming around to modifying their fleets, even in Texas. Luminant, for example, retired three huge coal plants this past year, 2018, just over 4,000 megawatts of coal, so 10 times the amount of San Miguel's output. So that was less than a year ago, but they still operate two huge coal plants, Oak Grove and Martin Lake. The city of San Antonio, which owns CPS Energy, finally shut down Dealey, which is a large two-unit plant on Calaveras Lake, but they still operate the Spruce Coal Plant at the same site, which is a much larger two-unit plant. The report release that we're here talking about today notes that all of these sites are contaminated, and some of those are pretty new plants, like the Oak Grove plant. But it's not all bad news. We see that other cities are continuing to innovate and lead, and we have 100 cities across the entire country that have committed to 100% renewable energy future. That equates to 1 in 7 people in the U.S. that live in a place that's committed to 100% renewable energy. And more Texans can and should be within those ranks. And some of those cities include big cities like Washington, D.C., which plans to be powered by 100% renewable energy by 2032. And then smaller cities right here in Texas, like Georgetown, who is already at 100% clean, and Denton, which plans to be there by 2020. Denton's a great example because they own a fair amount of their own power generation. And we still see that they, that Denton, and their municipal partners are moving to retire coal, specifically the Gibbons Creek plant discussed in this report, and they're going to add significant solar. Last year, Denton entered into new solar contracts as part of a joint effort with several other Texas public utilities, including Bryan Texas Utilities, Garland Power and Light, New Braunfels Utilities, and the City of Kerrville. These cities first asked for proposals from developers, and the response led to more than 37 solar companies offering over 100 different projects in more than 60 Texas counties. Market forces, and more importantly, our communities, are clearly ready to support the transition from coal to clean energy. The climate, our air, and our water can't afford for us to wait any longer.
Thanks very much, Chrissy. That was Chrissy Mann from the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Now we're going to take questions and answers from reporters. Jai, why don't you tell the reporters what to do to ask a question?
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star and the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. We will pause for a moment for the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from Jeffrey Stanlin from Spectrum News. Your line is live.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's Jeff Stanlin from Spectrum News. We reached Austin and San Antonio. So, Mr. Peeler, you will probably see this if you on our newscast this afternoon in San Antonio. I wanted to see, as far as the two sites, the two plants that you have no data on, are you able to share which ones those are?
There are three that we don't have data for. One is, Chrissy, you're going to have to help me. I've forgotten what they are. Two of them are called Tolk and Harrington. And I think at those two plants, they claim to be exporting all of their coal ash. They don't store or dispose of any on site, and so they don't have anything to monitor. There's another plant that claims not to have any groundwater.
Yeah. The third plant is called Ocala Union.
Thank
it's
you.
On the border between Oklahoma and Texas, and they've already that plant is owned by AEP, and they've actually already announced that they're going to retire that plant. I don't have the exact retirement date, but sometime in the early 2020s.
Okay, and that gets to my main question then. LCRA and City of Austin co-own the Fayette Power Project, and I know that Austin has talked about its retirement of that plant, even though it has debt that will last long after it backs out of the deal. Are coal-fired power plant operators taking into account remediation costs as they consider decommissioning?
Abel, Russ, you want to try that?
I assume they are. I don't know. I don't have specific details about that for any given plant, but I think that is part of the calculus for any utility or power plant owner. That said, I don't think the coal ash cleanup costs are the make or break costs for a lot of these plants. I don't think these are the things that are going to make them close. I think they can very easily continue to operate and clean up their mess if they choose to do that.
I can add one more thing. This is Chrissy Mann with the Sierra Club. An example that's very, very fresh is the Gibbons Creek coal plant. They have just today, ERCOT gave the okay to mothball that plant indefinitely. And what that means is that the cities that own that plant are having to go through and calculate how much their share of the remediation costs are. And so those cities have budgeted that as part of their planned closure for that plant. So when you see plants that are being operated appropriately, then yes, that money set aside. In addition, there are bonding requirements for reclamation of the mining, at least, that are required by the Railroad Commission. So it's kind of scattershot.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it
Jeffrey?
Does. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Next question.
Our next question comes from Erwin Seba from Reuters. Your line is live.
Thank you. Hi, this is Erwin Seba with Reuters. Ms. Evans, you said something about and I apologize, the signal dropped out for part of what you were saying about the Dallas Cowboys Stadium being a mile high in ash every year. Is that the amount of – could you just restate that? I just missed part of it, and I found it interesting.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Lisa Evans, Justice, go ahead.
Yes, this is Lisa Evans. And is my line clear now?
I hear you.
Okay, good. What I was saying was that in the – amount of ash generated in Texas varies a bit by year, but taking a recent year, I saw that it was approximately 13 million tons of ash. So when you convert that to cubic yards, and I measure the area of a football field, stacking up the ash, it's going to be more than a mile high. So it's a good way to provide a visual of the enormous quantities of waste that are generated every year by the Texas plant.
Okay. I appreciate that. And just one other question for whoever. How soon will you guys be suing the state of Texas over its proposed plan for coal ash protection?
Abel Russ of EIP, do you have a response to that?
I might pass this back to Lisa, but I'll just say there's nothing on the table right now. They had pre-proposed a plan, and then they withdrew it, presumably because the federal rule that they have to base their state rule off of keeps changing. So I think I'm just assuming here, but I think what the state regulator is probably thinking is that they'll wait to see where the federal rule lands, and then they'll proceed with their state rulemaking. And I think it's safe to assume that if the plan is weaker than the federal rule, which it's not allowed to be, there will be a legal challenge. Lisa, you might want to say something else.
This is Lisa Evans. Abel, I think you've said it well. I would just point to where another neighboring state, Oklahoma, passed a weak and we think illegal coal ash regulations, at least illegal in that they are not as protective as the federal rule. So we do have a suit there against EPA for authorizing the Oklahoma regulations to operate in lieu of the federal rule.
Okay. Yeah, I knew about that. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from Mose Buscelli from KUT 90.5. Your line is live.
Hey, everybody. I think that you've kind of addressed this, but I just wanted to ask it directly and hopefully get it addressed very directly. You're saying that these levels of contamination are unsafe, but is any of this currently illegal, either by state law or federal?
It's not illegal under the federal coal ash rule, only because the rule operates in a sequence of events, and every coal plant is sort of halfway down that road. If they're in assessment monitoring and they find significant evidence of contamination in assessment monitoring, then they have to start doing corrective action and remediation. And if they miss deadlines along the way, then they violate the rule. And some of the plants in our report have failed to post certain documents that we think they should have posted. That's a violation of the rule. They've missed deadlines, maybe. That would be a violation of the rule. But the contamination itself is only a violation of the rule to the extent that it triggers other consequences. And those other consequences haven't started yet, but they will soon.
You opened up talking about some, bodies of water where people fish, people swim. Are there places that you've found in your research where this is contaminated drinking water?
Lisa Evans of Earth Justice, do you have an answer to that?
Go
ahead.
I'm sorry. The question is in Texas, or have we found coal ash ponds throughout the country that have contaminated water?
I'm curious about Texas first.
Yeah, and on Texas, and I hate to pump this back to Abel. I take a more national or more knowledgeable about the national picture. But Abel, I don't know if you can handle that one.
Yeah, sure.
Abel Russ, go ahead.
We We don't know is the short answer. There isn't any monitoring of neighboring residential wells as far as we know. So the short answer is we just don't know. We do know, as Lisa alluded to, there are certainly instances across the country where coal ash has migrated off-site to the point where it's affecting residential wells. To be frank, we also know that there are some plants in Texas that are in pretty rural areas without a lot of residential wells near them. But that's not any source of comfort to me, because one of the things we're trying to do here is protect groundwater as a resource for not just people who might be using it now, but for future generations. And in fact, that's the way EPA approached the problem. That's the way most state policies are engineered. Most environmental policies try to protect groundwater as a resource for future generations. And so all of these aquifers at all 16 of these coal plants are now, at this point, unusable. And unless the owners take action to remove the source of contamination and clean up the groundwater, they will remain unusable for a very long time. And as you know, in Texas, clean drinking water is a very scarce and precious resource. And so the fact that one by one these aquifers are blinking offline is a big issue for us.
Absolutely. One final question. Did someone want to add something?
This is Lisa Evans. I was just going to underscore the fact that the federal coal ash rule on which the report is based required monitoring of groundwater on the utility site. It did not require the testing of drinking water wells, let's say within a half mile of the site, which could be impacted by the contamination that was found on site. So that's why we, unfortunately, cannot pinpoint exactly how far that these plumes of contamination have traveled. But in other places where either people unfortunately have been made sick, or where the state, as in North Carolina, has required the testing of off-site wells, those the contaminated drinking water wells indeed have been found.
I'm sorry if I'm making you repeat yourself, but I'm looking at the list of recommendations you have for TCEQ in the report, and I take it that they're in the process of coming up with a state rule, and so these recommendations are intended as, what you would advise as they move ahead with that.
Abel Russ, do you have an answer for that?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question? I have to think about that one a little bit.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Like, in the report, you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like right now, TCEQ is looking at developing a state rule for, to kind of address this. And there are recommendations in this report that you would advise that they take under consideration, like as they develop that state rule.
Yeah, there are. And, to give an example of one of those recommendations, I was in Georgia yesterday. And in Georgia, they regulate inactive landfills as coal ash units, which is great. They should. And the federal rule doesn't do that. But what we want to see is the states taking a little bit more stringent of an approach than the federal government has done, which states are absolutely entitled to do. And so specifically, like Georgia, we think Texas should regulate all of the coal ash dumps at each power plant, not just the ones that are regulated by the federal rule. And so, for example, at the Parrish site, there are multiple coal ash landfills at that site that aren't regulated by the federal rule, but we know from groundwater monitoring from several years ago there's a lot of contamination around those sites. You can't clean up the groundwater at Parrish by only cleaning up the regulated sites. You have to look at all the coal ash at the site. And so we think that's the approach Texas should take and other states are taking.
And Mose, yeah, well, we are sending our report to TCEQ, and we hope that they'll read our recommendations and take them into account as they write up better, stronger state regulations.
It occurs to me we have a big problem of abandoned oil wells in the state, and with this big march of coal plant closures in Texas, does that pose its own kind of unique challenge to this? I mean, you mentioned some ponds and disposal sites where, people might not even know where they are, but perhaps former owners. Is there a kind of timeliness to this now as we're seeing coal plants shut down?
Christy Mann, do you have an answer for that one? That's Sierra Club.
Yeah, I think that there is a timeliness to addressing this as soon as possible because, you know, there was an earlier question about whether or not money is budgeted, but we've seen a huge, and I mentioned Luminant earlier, go through a bankruptcy proceeding, and we presume that their new parent company has plenty of funds set aside to handle these kind of remediation issues, but we don't know that that's the case across the board in Texas because we don't have a very transparent process for knowing what kinds of funds are set aside and what kinds of plans are in place for cleaning up both the coal ash sites themselves and the mining sites across Texas that are like the ones or were like the ones in the past that the Peeler family is having to deal with right now. And so, you know, more than a handful of the plants in Texas used to mine lignite and no longer do. And so those lignite mines may have been filled with coal ash waste, and lignite is the most dangerous, least efficient form of coal and has some of the heaviest metal concentrations. So we see plants, you know, closing down and trying to figure out ways to walk away from those sites as quickly as possible. And I think there is a timeliness issue. So San Miguel is a great example. San Miguel Electric Co-op only operates that one plant. And so they sort of all their eggs are in that same basket. And it's really important that we make sure that site's remediated properly because when their customers figure out that they're paying too much for dirty, inefficient coal power and they renegotiate contracts or whatever happens in the future that we've been seeing across the country, this plant is going to shut down and the cooperative isn't going to exist anymore. And so there is a timeliness issue. And so we really want to make sure that folks like the Peelers are taken care of and also folks that are just in communities like around the parish plant are taken care of. Fort Bend County is the fastest growing county in the state, or one of the fastest growing counties in the state. And the NRG Parish plant is basically located in straight up suburbia now. And so, yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head there.
Thank you.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Cameron Langford from Courthouse News. Your line is live.
Yeah, this question is for Mr. Peeler. Have you seen any effect on your cattle or had their blood tested? Are you concerned that butchers won't want to buy your cattle based on this report?
Jason Peeler?
Okay. So the last question first, yes, we worry about it. We worry about people not wanting to buy our beef because of it. So that's definitely a concern. So what we did is we pulled off areas that we felt like were dangerous and are not grazing them. But I have not tested the meat, to answer your first question. But it's
okay. Issue. Have you seen any effect on you or your family's health?
No. Not that we know.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from Jarrett Knight from KETR-FM. Your line is live. Mr. Knight, your line is live.
Jarrett, are you muted? Can you unmute? Jarrett, are you there? Are you muted, Jarrett? Okay, you might have dropped off the line. Let's go to our next question.
Our next question comes from Suzanne Johanna from Inside EPA. Your line is live.
Hi, yes. I was wondering if you could tell me, could this data that you've looked at help your litigation against EPA? And if so, how? I guess this question is for Lisa Evans.
Lisa Evans?
Yes. Hi, Susanna. Yes, surely the evidence of widespread contamination and the particulars of how serious the contamination is play a role in our litigation. For example, we have opposed the latest Trump rollback, which is to extend the life of unlined coal ash ponds and coal ash ponds sitting in groundwater. The fact that these ponds are leaking hazardous chemicals at unsafe levels into the groundwater certainly speaks to the dangerousness and illegality of the extension of those deadlines. So, yes, the answer is definitely yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, next question.
There are no further questions in queue.
I have a question that was emailed to us, and I wanted to see if we can get an answer from our panel. These coal ash dumps that we outlined in the report that are leaking contaminants currently, now that they've reported that they're leaking these contaminants into the groundwater, do the regulations require them to be closed and cleaned up? Abel Russ, do you know an answer to that?
They do at a certain point. There's a compliance schedule that every coal plant is currently in the middle of following. And so they start out by doing a round of what's called background monitoring, where they measure the groundwater 8 times for everything that the rule includes. Then they have to start something called detection monitoring, where they're systematically looking for a short list of indicators of coal ash, like boron and sulfate. Then they have to, if they find evidence of contamination in detection monitoring, they have to go into assessment monitoring, where they look for a longer list of pollutants, like arsenic and chromium and cobalt and molybdenum. And most of the sites we've looked at are in that stage now. And then when you're in that stage, you eventually have results, and the results tell you whether you've exceeded groundwater protection standards. And if you have, then you have to start doing the corrective action work. And that includes things like bringing the groundwater back down to a level that meets groundwater protection standards and removing as much of the material from the environment, contaminated material from the environment as you can, and a list of things like that. But most plants haven't gotten to that point yet, or if they have, they haven't made that publicly available. Earth Justice did a great job of identifying the sites that have gotten to that point. And I don't, Lisa, I'm not sure if I'm right about this. I don't believe any Texas plants are on that list. We just haven't seen the information yet, so we don't know. But based on the data I've seen, they do have to present the background data, which includes all of the contaminants that would be measured in assessment monitoring. And based on that data set, it looks like most of these plants are going to have to go into corrective action for one or more of their coal ash units. So that's what we expect to see happen. It just hasn't happened yet.
Gotcha. So they're not immediately required to close, but they are required to do more testing, which could then trigger requirement for closure.
Yeah, and I actually want to add one thing, which is that the way the rule was originally written, closure would be triggered by failure to show that your ponds are 5 feet above an aquifer, or failure, or evidence of groundwater contamination if you have an unlined pond. Various things like that would trigger closure. Now, there was a D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals opinion last year that resolved a case that we brought challenging the 2015 coal ash rule. And what the D.C. Circuit determined was that we were right, and that all unlined ash impoundments are unsafe, and they all have to be closed. So now it doesn't really matter what the groundwater data show. The ponds have to close. There are other requirements related to remediation of groundwater and corrective action beyond pond closure that depend more on the extent of contamination and whether the ponds are close to the groundwater and things like that. But they all have to close, basically.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for participating. You can find a copy of the report again on our website, www.environmentalintegrity.org. Also, check out our Ash Tracker site, which has locations across Texas and across the country and their levels of coal ash contamination, www.ashtracker.org. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to call me, Tom Pelton, at 443-510-2574. And again, thanks to everyone for participating, and have a great afternoon.
That concludes this afternoon's teleconference. You may now disconnect your line.